Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That is not an alien invasion you're listening to. That is the mating call of the male cicada. And who could resist, right? Ladies, with their bulging red eyes and hairy legs, cicadas look like fierce predators, but they're actually quite harmless and even beneficial to the environment. With us to answer more questions about those mosquitoes and all others that creepeth uponeth the earth-eth is Bugman Mark Berman. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Okay, that's quite a racket, but I think it's really interesting, the pattern of it.
I think anytime nature makes us pay attention, it's a good thing. And the emergence of the cicadas, that's one opportunity for us to not be able to ignore. It's like when the mayflies come out up at Port Clinton in Lake Erie. You can't ignore it. And I always like it when you can't ignore nature. And so, and it's funny because I was talking to Mandy earlier about the cicadas, and she said, but I thought that we have cicadas every year. And we do have cicadas every year. And there's actually, I don't even know, hundreds of different species of cicadas worldwide. The ones that we're talking about are, I think it's seven different species that are in various broods that emerge only periodically. And the one that's coming up this year that's getting all the press is called Brood 2. There's 15 recognized broods, and 12 of them, I did a little research on this because I figured it would come up, but 12 of them are the northern broods, and they emerge every 17 years. And three of them are southern broods, and they emerge every 13 years. Mm-hmm. And the Brood 2 that's coming up now has three different species that are emerging at the same time. And so they'll all come up. They'll come out of their larval shell. They'll climb up in the trees, make a lot of noise, mate, lay eggs, die. The babies will hatch in about 2 weeks, climb down the tree, go underground, and feed on roots and the juices in roots for 17 years. And during the time that they're underground, they make, as I understand it, they make seasonal migrations to higher and lower depths in the soil. So at different times of year, if you knew that there were some around, you could dig at different depths and find some of the nymphs still living underground. And I think I heard that they shed their skin maybe 30 times or something as they grow from over those 17 years. And then I just read that some research shows that they take cues from the trees that they're feeding on to know when the 17 years have expired. I know, that was the same expression I had on my face.
Like it's the roots are getting bigger? Like my straw has grown.
It's weird, and I don't know enough about it to speak completely authoritatively. That's my qualification for saying I don't know what I'm talking about, but I kind of do because I guess that the study that they did was they changed the light and water regime of trees. They doubled it, so the trees would grow faster and think that they were growing through years faster, and it affected the time that it took for the cicadas to come up. It's just weird. The whole thing's weird.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. If you have a question or comment for Mark Berman, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page, post your question or comment there, and you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. So these bugs create such a racket. How can a single female cicada distinguish one male's song from another? Or does it not matter?
Geez. You know, you're talking to a single guy who I just don't know how those games are played. I've always maintained that their ability to behave is limited by our abilities to observe their behaviors. Huh. We see very little of what goes on in the world. And so, I mean, if you as a female, but even if you were a male and you sat and listened to two different male cicadas call one right after the other, you could probably tell the difference. And so I don't know what it takes for a female to like one male over
do
another.
Do they hear?
Well,
it?
Yeah. I mean, anything that makes noise,
they
unless,
hear.
Usually, unless it's a defensive noise, like some things that are going to make, if they're making, I mean, these cicadas are making a noise to communicate with each other. And so there's no use making a noise to communicate if you can't hear it. And so, yeah, they have ears. And I want to say I heard that females make a noise too, but it's a different noise that isn't as loud. And I can't, I'm not 100% positive of that, but I think so. I've known about this for a long time. The first time I ever observed, have you ever been in a cicada outbreak when they've been out?
I have.
Yeah, the last one here was in 04, I think.
Okay, and I can't really remember.
Well, the first time
but
I ever.
It's loud.
It's very loud, and it's constant. It's like this constant
it's
drone.
It's cool, though.
It's extremely
cool. It's not going to
cool.
last forever.
It's very cool. They and they don't do any major damage. They could affect some small trees. They lay their eggs in the little teeny twigs at the ends of branches.
Okay.
And so the female has a little, rotating saw kind of thing mm-hmm. on her back end that she digs into the and actually we have a very good video of that on our website okay. of her digging in and laying her eggs in the stem of the plant, and then the babies hatch out. And so when you're standing there, there's this constant drone in the background, and then you hear individuals coming and going, you know, like you'll hear one close by. But the first time I ever heard it was in 1987, right before I went to college, and it was the weekend that the Memorial Tournament started. And so in 87, I was lucky enough to get invited to one of the practice rounds for the Memorial Tournament, and you could be standing in the gallery and just talk normally because there were cicadas everywhere, and you didn't have to whisper or be real quiet because you couldn't hear anything if you were talking in a normal tone of voice. It was an amazing, and they were flying. And I mean, the TV coverage started off with an opening scene of a close-up of a cicada because that was the news. And it turns out that 17 years prior to that, there wasn't a golf course there. And so it was all woods. And so they thought they were all coming out in the woods where they went under. And all of a sudden, it's wide open spaces. And there's people everywhere with plaid pants and yellow shirts.
How do they survive when that
happens? They're underground.
But when they come out, there's no trees.
Well, that was a weird emergence for those guys, at least in the area of Muirfield, and that was in 87. And so then there was a small emergence in 04. The next one will be 21. But this particular one, because it's happening across the eastern seaboard, New York and even part of D.C. and the Carolinas and stuff, it's going to get a lot of press and a lot of notice because mm-hmm. that's where all the press is.
Is it happening right now?
It just started.
Okay.
It starts when the soil temperature gets to like 64 degrees, and the nymphs do a series of coming up and going back down again before they actually come up to emerge. So it's almost like they come up and check things out. So you start seeing holes in the ground a week or two before it really starts. But then there's a couple different sites online. One's called Cicada Mania, and you can go on. I know. What would you call it?
I don't know.
and so there's a couple different places you can go on. If you just go do a search for 17-year cicadas, you'll find all kinds of pages. And it's interesting because you can look up cicada brood maps, and you can see a map that shows with dots where emergences are for each of the 15 broods. And the interesting thing with an organism that only allows you to collect data every 17 years, and one of the leading researchers on the cicadas right now, her name is Chris Simon, and she's at the University of Connecticut. She was in Hawaii when I was an undergrad, and she was studying them when she was in Hawaii. And every summer, she would come to a different place in the Midwest to study the 17-year cicadas because they're in a different locality every time. So she was always on this kind of interesting field trip every summer to go look at the cicadas, which I would love to do, too, just every year go to and learn about mm-hmm. the different places that they come out. But the problem with studying something that only comes up every 17 years is you have to wait 17 years before you can study it again, generally, at least in the same place.
At least that same brood.
Right. And so the brood maps, the last time that anybody saw brood 2, there was no internet. And there were no cell phones. And so the brood map has is limited by the guy who could find out where they were 17 years ago. And so now there's a guy who I believe it's the guy who runs the Cicada Mania page, who goes out, and he's got a laptop with GPS, and he goes out with his windows open to the fringes of the recognized range of brood, whatever brood is up this year, and he hears the noise, and you can tell the different species by their call. And he hears the noise and pushes a button, and he extends the brood map. And so after this round of 15 broods, the brood maps are going to be a lot more clearly defined, and they're actually getting substantially larger than they were before.
Gosh, you've heard of storm chasers. Now these are cicada chasers.
I know. Doesn't make you think you're in the wrong business?
Let's take a quick call from Kevin in Granville. You're on the air. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Thanks for your conversation about cicadas. I've lived through the 87 and the 04 outbreak of Brood X in Maryland and D.C. And you made the point that they do rise when the weather reaches a certain point. Usually it's about the same time you plant your peppers. I also wanted to comment that there is an annual cicada that usually comes up in late June or early July. Old wives' tales say that 90 days after you hear the first cicada, there will be the first frost. And finally, I wanted to note that Bob Dylan wrote a song about cicadas in 1970 when he got an honorary degree at Princeton, was in the midst of Brood X, and he wrote a song about the high whining trill of the locusts singing. And that's my comments. I just wanted to pass that on.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. And somewhere in that verse said something to the effect of, and they're singing for me. So, you know, Bob Dylan, no ego.
They have a similar drone.
My guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. We have been talking about cicadas. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. We can talk about any old bug you want to talk about when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Okay.
Support for 89.7 comes from Green Bean Delivery, offering home delivery of fresh organic produce and natural groceries, striving to make healthy eating more accessible to the communities of Greater Columbus. Details on Green Bean Delivery's products, as well as how to place an order, can be found online at greenbeandelivery.com.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, hope and fear in Pakistan, an historic election day and high stakes all over. We'll go there. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support 89.7 NPR News at $85 and receive the WOSU member card. Good for discounts at more than 200 partners. Visit WOSU.org/member card.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sorry, that was a little lengthy break, but all of a sudden, Mark Berman, my guest, said, geez, what happened to my little blue beetle? Did you see it walk away?
He died.
Oh, no.
Oh, man, because he fell on the floor, and I thought, all right, we'll come back to it. Go on.
We've been talking about cicadas. Now we have a funeral to think about.
Oh, man.
That is really sad. All right, let's get to...
I hate it when the ones you pay for die.
Yeah, that was worth some money. First of all, question about their looks as far as cicadas go. By the way, Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. I'm sorry, we're just in a little bit of shock right now. The blue bug has died. Okay. I did not write this. My assistant producer, Rachel Quimby, wrote this, so she says, no offense to them, but they look really hideous. Is there any particular reason their eyes are red? Have they been crying?
And as I mentioned in break, my answer is always just because they look so different than you and you're so good looking doesn't make them, hideous. Okay, so that actually ties in with the last caller when he was talking about the annual cicadas, the ones that are here every year. I don't know, we'll see. But the ones that are here every year are a different species, and there's lots and lots, hundreds of different species and some really bizarre species of cicadas with really unusual, unbelievable, almost unearthly calls, even stranger than the one that we heard in the
that
opening.
That was like a UFO, or not a UFO, like an alien starship.
I know, and it doesn't even sound natural in any way. And then there are some of them that, especially in the jungles in, you know, in Asia and places like that, that they look really... Oh, look, he's
the blue
alive.
Beetle's walking again.
How do you like that?
Aw, let's not lose him.
Not to interrupt. This is the death feigning beetle, and his big defense is to play dead. I was tricking you.
You knew he was not dead.
That's why I wasn't so upset. We would have had to stop the show.
I was getting all upset.
Aw, look at that. I know.
Yeah, he is a good actor.
I know. And then
I don't know if anyone can see this I don't know.
Just imagine a bug laying on his back with his legs in the air.
Yeah. A powdered blue bug.
Poor thing. I know. He's really beautiful. Beetle. And then you give him to a kid and he does that. And you're like, you killed my beetle. What's the, you killed it.
Bad bug
jokes. It comes back to life. So.
I'm sorry.
When he came back to life, I was right in the middle of the locals, the annual cicadas that come up every year. Are green and have kind of clearish green wings, mm-hmm. and they aren't hideous either. And the ones that come up every 17 years are smaller, a little bit. They're still big bugs. They're a little bit smaller, and they're black with bright red eyes and orange wings, and they're just beautiful. As a matter of fact, the last time they were around here, there's a naturalist at, I don't know if you know, at Blendon Woods, Sarah Dalton, and she does a whole bunch of monarch butterfly stuff. I don't know if you ever talked to her.
No, I haven't.
She's interesting and knows more about monarch butterflies than almost anybody in town. Well, almost anybody in town. And she used to take their wings and dip them in some kind of something and make earrings out of them because they're yellow. Really beautiful. Oh, sorry. Really beautiful yellow wings that are kind of orangish wings.
Weird.
And so I think they're really beautiful regardless. And
I don't know whether people are going to be able to see much, but you can go to wosu.org/allsides and watch the show. There's a shot.
Can you see?
Watch
oh, look,
the
he's
show.
He's turning over.
He's almost. Quite something.
Yes. This is a desert beetle.
This is quite something, this little beetle. Anyways, if you want to watch and see what kind of bugs you can catch or watch online, check it out at wosu.org/allsides because it's always a lot of fun when Mark Berman brings the bugs in. Let's take a couple calls. People have been waiting, and I'm not. Let's see. Susan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, thank you for this show. I love cicadas.
Thank you.
I like that sound. I have a question, though. I think they're called June bugs that are cropping up in our neighborhood and hitting our walls and our dogs eating them. Are they dangerous? And they're those little armored brown things.
Are they dangerous?
Or toxic, or do they wreck your garden? We've never had this.
Okay, sorry.
I don't think they wreck your garden. I think they're mostly scavengers, but I could be wrong about that. And so I don't know if they're known to do any real damage to your garden. You usually see them around lights at night and stuff, and they're big. They're actually in the family of beetles called scarab beetles, which are, you know, one of the most famous bugs around because of the ancient Egyptians and whatever. And so I have never known them to be harmful or of any real economic importance other than being a nuisance. I do know a guy in Missouri who has some really good recipes for them. And
I knew you were going to say something like that. See, if you bring up eating bugs, Susan.
She didn't bring up eating bugs. She brought up June bugs. But eating June bugs, you can eat them.
Oh, yeah. The benefit. Is there any benefit to them? Yeah, actually.
Yeah, you can eat them.
Yeah. So I think it was her dog eat. Susan, thanks for bringing that up.
And by the way, if your dog eats them, it's not going to hurt your dog.
It's protein, right?
Right.
614-292-8513. And I did notice a few minutes ago that they did capture some beautiful video of the little blue faker bug.
Good. We'll put him up. And he is, you said things you can find. And this one is a western desert beetle. And so you're not going to find one of these around here so much. But the other things I brought, these little spiders in here are called cellar spiders. And
they're not that little.
They're kind of scrawny. And these are a lot of times you'll find these in basements. And they're one of the spiders responsible for cobwebs.
Uh-huh.
And one of the nice things about them in a display like this is if they're settled enough, and they were in the car and everything, so I don't know if they are, but sometimes you can get them to spin. And so, it's going a little bit. See, that motion right there is not me doing that. That's the spider doing that. So I just get it started, and then it spins. And sometimes they spin so fast you can't even see them. But you see it shaking
it
like that.
I'm not doing something.
Yeah, it's doing all that by itself.
Yeah.
And if you ever see those, and I mean, sometimes it really gets going, but I was moving it around too much. And if you see those big black and yellow garden spiders, have you ever seen those with the big round webs?
Yes.
If you make little vibrations near the edges of their webs, they'll do that too. They'll start shaking their web back and forth real, real fast.
And are they trying to stick things to it?
Yeah, or trying to disappear. If they get moving, like if this one gets moving fast enough, you can hardly even see it. It's just like a little whirl. But also if you drop some little fruit flies or whatever in there, it'll start spinning around to try to catch them more.
Okay, it's cicada day. Jennifer in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show. I listen every day.
Thank you.
This is awesome. I love cicadas. I'm from Long Island, New York, and every summer I would go look for, like, when they had their carcasses on the trees, but they would come out of their shells, and I would find the cicadas and stick them to my shirt, and I would chase my sister around because she was terrified of them.
Oh, you're real fun, Jennifer.
Yeah,
I got to go reteach
typical
all that.
Typical fan of all sizes of hand.
Well, you know, because their feet are sticky, or they have like the nail on them, or whatever it is. And
like
so
little...
you just hook it to your shirt, and I mean, it would stick perfectly. And I would put like, I don't know, 8, 10 of them on my clothes and just run around the front lawn and play with them. And,
but you mean the empty?
Hated me for that.
You mean the empty shells, right?
Well, no, I would actually find the live ones.
Oh, cool. You mean after they got their wings or the babies?
Yeah. No, afterwards.
Cool.
I love them. And then maybe something that's not so nice, I didn't know better because I was young, but I would bring them into my cat, and she liked to chase them around because they would, you know, zoom around the kitchen and on the floor and stuff, and she may have eaten them a time or two.
I think they made more. Eat all you want. They'll make more.
Well, I feel bad now, but I didn't feel bad then.
I don't know. You don't sound like you feel bad, Jennifer.
No, but it's nice.
It's funny.
It's nice that she's giving it lip service.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Jennifer. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, when they first come up out of ground, they're little brown things, and I don't know if you have a visual for what. Have you ever seen the empty shells hanging on the trees?
Yes.
That's what they look like. I mean, that's what the babies look like when they crawl up out of the ground, and they have those little hooks on tarsi, little hooks on the end of their feet. That they can hold on to the tree really well, because then their head splits open and they back out. They come out through their head, through the head of their shell, and they kind of back out of it. So they lean way back, and it'd be really easy for them to fall off. So those hooks hold on really well. And then I put it away.
Okay.
And I know that look.
Mark can read my mind now.
And then the grown-ups, when they're out there making all that noise, one of the problems with making noise like that, and all the bugs that make noise to attract each other, especially in courtship, have this problem. If you're attracting a mate, you're also attracting predators. So when you're saying, hey, I'm over here, I'm over here, I'm over here, it's not just the girls who hear that. And so we did a really interesting project in an animal behavior class I took at Ohio State one year when we sat everybody on stools around the outside of a big circle, and one person in the middle with their eyes covered, and the professor had it was a tape player back then. It just had a little, like one of those tapes in it, like a cassette tape.
Olden days.
It was a long time ago. And and then you would spin the person in the middle around just a little bit to disorient them a little. And then he would play various, in this case it was bird calls, but it's the same principle. And then have the person try to identify point from which direction it was coming. And some were really easy to locate. And if you were trying to attract a mate, you would want that mate to be able to figure out where you are. Mm. But if you were warning other birds that there's a predator around, you would want to be able to make a noise that they could hear but couldn't be localized real easily, so the predator couldn't find you. So a lot of times, the little short, loud staccato sounds are the ones that are harder to locate. And when you hear a cicada buzz, if you try to find it, it's not so easy to do. They blend in well, but also their noise is kind of hard to triangulate on because of the different qualities of it. And so so that noise can be an advantage or a disadvantage in in different situations.
Stephen in Columbus, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I sail out on Lake Erie all year long, at least when it's not cold. And you can almost look at the lake by bug seasons. This time of the year, we'll start getting large quantities of what I call Canadian soldiers. I don't know what the Canadians call them, but you get a good north wind coming off the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And they accumulate all over your boats. And
little flies, you mean?
They're not very friendly smelling when they start to decay.
Mm-hmm.
Neither are we.
Good point.
I've seen photographs from years past where they had to use snow plows because there were so many of them to clean them up in the streets.
Are these like mayflies or like smaller
mayflies is another... I think they've used for them.
They hold their wings up like sails over their back.
Yeah. The ducks like to eat them. When I hose them off the boat, the fish are well fed.
Okay.
But it's an amazing.
I have no idea what they're good for. Otherwise.
Well, what are you good for?
Well, it says here that you're going to ask whether or not they're related to cicadas.
How do they? Fit into the insect world?
Well, they actually they're more closely related to these guys, but they the way they fit into the insect world is the same way cicadas do. They're in different groups within the class of insects. They're in different orders, and so the mayflies, interestingly, are in the order called Ephemeroptera, which the ones that end in Optera, P-T-E-R-A, means wing. And so Ephemeroptera, mayflies are interesting because they have an aquatic larva, so they live in the water for the first part of their lives. And then just like damselflies or dragonflies, they'll climb up on a emergent branch and shed their skin the way I was describing cicadas do. They just lean back and come out of their head. And mayflies are interesting because they have a sub-adult stage, and they're the only group of insects that has a stage that is non-reproductive but has wings. So the adult, official name for the adult is the imago, I-M-A-G-O, because it's the final image of the animal. And they have what's called a sub-imago that lives for a day. So they shed their skin, they come out, they have wings, but they don't have reproductive capabilities yet, and then they shed their skin again. And they're the only insects who do that. Most of the time when they have their wings, they're grown-ups. And you described what good they do when you said, well, you scrape them off the boat, and the ducks and the fish go nuts. They love them, and the birds love them. And so those things are the tetramen of the nature world. Those are fish food mostly. Same with mosquitoes. Personally, I have a little bit of a fundamental problem with the, well, what purpose is it? Because... other mayflies probably think they're beautiful, you know? and so thinking of things in terms of a purpose, it's good to understand the relationships between organisms, but they don't need to have a purpose to be worthy of being here with us.
Interesting philosophy.
So we can describe it, but it doesn't answer it. Yeah.
All right, Stephen, thanks, and happy sailing this summer on the... Lake Erie, I imagine. Thank you. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to talk with my guest, Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. Bug experts don't like it when you confuse cicadas with locusts.
Yeah, there's a lot bug experts.
It doesn't. I'm not an expert, but it doesn't really bother me.
It's hard knowing so much stuff that other people don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I don't know, but about bugs, there's a lot of people who don't know much about it. And locusts are the reason they get confused is because locusts have these big, huge. Well, they call them plagues too. Big, huge population explosions where there's locusts everywhere. And that happens with cicadas also, and I think that's where the main confusion comes from. But locusts look a lot more like grasshoppers. Locusts basically are grasshoppers, and they spend most of their lives as sort of mottled brown-colored grasshoppers. And when their populations reach certain thresholds and or their food sources reach certain thresholds, they change and become gregarious and go on these big swarms. Most of the time, locusts live kind of passive grasshopper lives, eating plants and stuff, so they still have economic importance. But it's only under certain conditions of high population and low food that they make this physiological change and then just go on these rampages, which some people call plagues, but they could also call them banquets. And, I mean, you can eat those things. And so if they come and eat your crops, you can
eat them back.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be a plague.
Well, it probably is such a negative thing, too, because they're probably often associated with droughts and things like that when the food source, you know, which is doubles the damages and the suffering that people go through.
It's always
doubles. I have no idea what the mathematics of it is, but.
Yeah. Well, and I get what you're saying because it's two different factors impacting on it. But, okay.
No, we got to hear from George.
Okay.
In Perrysville.
Okay.
Okay, George, you got a kindred spirit in the studio with me right now. Go ahead.
Yes, he definitely does. During the last cicada outbreak here in northern Ohio, I was teaching sixth grade science. And you know, there were a lot of newspaper reports out at the time about the cicadas are coming, it's the end of the world or whatever. And I did some research and found that there was actually a recipe out there for fried cicadas.
Lots.
And I shared that with my students who were really keen on that. But I sent home permission slips, being careful. And we fried some cicadas and tried them in the classroom. And it was rather hysterical. I can tell you one thing, if you're wearing braces, you can get the wings stuck.
See? I always tell people that's one thing about cows. If you eat them right, you don't get their legs stuck in your teeth. If you do it right.
A good point. But good tip, George.
So George, did you eat the mature ones with wings or the babies?
Yeah, the mature ones, yes.
Yeah,
with wings.
I
understand. But the ones that were emerging, I also raised chickens at the time. And my chickens would have nothing to do with corn. They were just all over the cicadas when they were coming up.
That's one of the theories about their insane life cycle, that they're gone for 17 years and then just appear in huge, incredible numbers. And nobody knows exactly how something like that evolves, but the prevailing theory is that prime numbers have a lot to do with it, and long time frames have a lot to do with it, because predators can't really sort of track population eruptions like that. There isn't a predator that could coordinate a 17-year life cycle with this big, huge emergence
of
animals.
They only count in twos.
Well, if it was 15, they could count in threes or fives and still manage to match it up over the generations. And same with anything other than a prime number. But the cicadas that come up every year here are on 3 or 5 year life cycles, but they overlap. So the ones that come up this summer will have gone underground 3 years ago or 5 years ago, but they're all in prime numbers. There's 3, 5, 13 and 17, I think, are the main life cycles. And they're all prime numbers, and that's always been something that's really fascinated researchers. And they think it has to do with the whole so that all of a sudden George doesn't have a billion chickens 1 year. Oh, look, all of a sudden there's a billion chickens because there's going to be a lot of cicadas this year.
My guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist, also founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Thanks to George for his call. If you want to email us, you can do so at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
He sounded like it.
Meet a little-known consumer loan product with a big financial hook.
Every time they go in and refinance, they pay a new origination fee. They pay more credit insurance fees. It is not uncommon for someone to walk in and years later end up paying three times what they borrowed.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, a special investigation with ProPublica beyond payday loans next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
This afternoon at 6 on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Robert Caro talks about the fourth volume of his biography of Lyndon Johnson, covering the years 1958 to 1964. He describes the animosity between Johnson and Robert Kennedy this way.
Did you ever see two strange dogs come into a room, and all of a sudden they growl and the hair rises on the back of the neck?
Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Grater's Ice Cream. For over 140 years, the Grater family has handmade ice cream in small batches using natural ingredients. Grater's new black cherry chocolate chip ice cream and other signature flavors are available at 10 neighborhood locations and grocery stores. More information at Grater's.com.
From Thomas Jefferson's Virginia State House to the Walt Disney Concert Hall, watch 10 Buildings That Changed America, Monday night at 10 on WOSU-TV.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Mark Bourbon. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. He's putting little bugs and things on the counter right now. If you want to tune in, you can check out the website at wosu.org/allsides and maybe look at some gravel, and the gravel might start moving.
Hopefully. That's why I put that out there, to get it to move. By the way, you can also find us at Bugman Education on Facebook.
Right.
And at bugs.org, B-U-G-S.org.
Yep. We'll post that on our website at WOSU.org, bugs.org, WOSU.org. So easy to remember.
I always get yelled at for forgetting to mention it.
No, so. We post it on our website, too, okay, so there's that's absolutely okay. Let's try to get to some calls now. The person who's been waiting longest, and I just think it's all wrong, is your mother, Mark. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Thank you, Mark.
You didn't call her yesterday?
He posted something on Facebook.
Something
me.
Really charming and beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It was.
Phew.
It was very touching. Yes. Okay. So, yes, I'm satisfied.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for making an issue of that, Ann.
I do have a question for you. How long did you say this cicada outbreak will last?
Good question, Marilyn.
Yeah. It just started, and it should be up until like the middle of June, maybe. Last year when I was in Tennessee looking at the synchronized fireflies, which I don't know if I'll be able to make that.
Yeah,
we talked about
that.
And I don't know if I'll be able to make that trip this year. But they had just left, and that was like the first week in June, and they were just wrapping up the cicadas. So they go for about a month. I read yesterday. They just started yesterday, I think.
Okay, yeah. Marilyn.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for
Mom.
Your call.
That's it, Mom, really?
Well, she knows we have other callers.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay.
You don't want to ask me about that snake when I was five?
Oh, I'm sure the stories Marilyn Berman could tell. Jackie.
Ann?
In Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enjoying your program, as always.
Thank you.
I enjoyed the comment from, I think she grew up on Long Island.
Yeah.
And about how she terrorized her.
Sick Jennifer.
Yes.
What is it with you people?
Very troubled person.
Those poor bugs.
Well, it brings to mind my grandchildren. The girls like the bugs. The boys don't so much. So they do something similar. But they also use the skeletons of the cicadas as jewelry. They make nice little hair clips. they're young, so their hair is thin, and so instead of the little clips that you can buy, they make nice little hair clips in their hair and jewelry. Because they do stick so well with their little feet. But anyway, another observation is I get very nostalgic every at the end of the summer. It always seems to me the sound of the cicadas are saying, you know, enjoy it because it's almost over. And I'm a retired teacher, and so now it's nostalgic. But when I was actually teaching, it was kind of dread because I thought, oh.
Pre-playground noise.
Yes, I hear the cicadas, so it's almost time to start back. And but I love them. I grew up on a farm, and so my brothers and I had contests on who could collect and find the most shells. And we were fortunate to have a lot of trees in our yard, so we just went from tree to tree where they seemed to hang on the trunks. And anyway, it was just a little observation, but I'm enjoying hearing other people's comments about cicadas.
Have you experienced one of the 17-year cicada outbreaks?
You know, I think I remember one of those when I was a child, because being in the country, it seems like they were every place. But we also had some kind of pestilence with, I want to say, some worm or something. I remember my dad was upset because they loved corn, and they were every place. They were like little army worms or something. And I just remember those more than the cicadas. Hmm. The cicadas to me were nice bugs, but these worm things that came in the thousands, it seemed like, were every place. Unfortunately, the birds liked them, but anyway.
See, but people don't think you're bad because you like corn. That doesn't seem fair.
Well, you know, it's all
they like corn. Corn tastes good. They like corn. They're smart bugs.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But we don't really go in and devour a whole field at once.
That's true.
We let machines do that.
That's true.
and then we take it, make destructive high fructose corn syrup. That's a whole other thing.
Okay,
so anyway,
Jackie.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jackie.
Thanks.
You're
good
welcome.
Story.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
It's funny because you read, you know, and the first thing that your new producer said was that they're so hideous. And you read, if you read, there's a bunch of press about these guys now because they're in Press City where they're coming. Yeah. And because, especially because they're in New York City this year, they're going to make a lot more noise than usual. And they always start off with creepy and hideous and horrible and terrible. And then you hear all these people calling up and saying, oh, those are some of my best memories.
Yeah, how could they be creepy? Mary in Granville, you're on the air. Welcome, Mary.
Yes, hi. I have a couple of stories. One is I was raking leaves for my mom behind her barn, where they very rarely rake leaves. And so we were pulling up about maybe 8-10 inches of leaves, and all of a sudden I realized there's holes everywhere, and inside the holes were little white faces, and it scared the dickens out of me.
Little white faces?
It looked like snake heads, and so I ran thinking that I had unearthed snakes, and my mom reassured me that they were cicadas. So I'm hoping that you could reassure me as well.
If you were digging up...
Did their lips move?
If you were digging up leaves and saw a bunch of holes and they were snakes, their heads would not still be in the holes. They would have been gone a long time ago.
Right.
And the first thing I thought of was mining bees, which was something I discovered a couple weeks ago over by Wolf Park. And it's funny because I saw a snake and it scared me. But I'm not really scared of snakes, but it kind of surprised. I know, don't look at me like that. I looked around to make sure nobody heard me scream when I did. But I kind of went, ah! It's one of our summer library stories that I'm going to tell.
Achilles heel.
I know. Well, it isn't real. Hey, look, I used to do programs with 13-foot snakes before. And so
it was a surprise.
It surprised me, and I wasn't expecting it. And it kind of slithered off into this wall, and I went, ah, like that. This is one of the video stories in our library programs this summer, and the punchline is don't scream and run away. If you're going to scream, don't run away, because you'll never learn anything if you run away. And I stayed and ended up finding these really cool bees that are stingless, but that nest in the ground and individually. And you'll see them peek there. I've got some of the cutest video of these fuzzy little bees picking their heads up out of the ground and looking at, and then they'll look around and another one will come by and they'll duck back under the ground, and they're very adorable little bees. And I thought you were talking about that at first, but they would have ducked down and disappeared too. So if you still saw faces in the holes, they probably were cicadas because they would have moved more slowly and wouldn't have gotten out of the way.
Were they cute, Mary?
Yes.
When I went back and kind of looked at them from a distance because I wasn't sure what they were, but since they weren't moving, that made them a lot cuter.
Okay. I think baby chicks are cute, but okay.
This thing's will peck you. And...
Now, can I tell my other story about cicadas, which I knew were cicadas? We were camping, and we were trying to clear our camping area, and the best way I figured to get them out of there was to just pick them up and throw them. And when we threw them, they'd go about 20 feet and then come back in an arch just like a boomerang.
Cool.
You'd catch them each time. And every single time I threw it, they'd come right back. And we started having fun with them. So I was wondering why they would do that.
So were these the green ones or the 17-year ones?
I believe it was a 17-year because there were hundreds. They were
interesting.
Everywhere.
I'm really planning to make a trip to do video, a little bit of collecting.
That's interesting thing.
Get some to cook, and so if I get, oh, stop. You know what? And you're going to try. And by the way, Mandy said that she tried the cricket brittle, and you didn't.
It's sitting on my desk.
And she said.
Day.
And she said it wasn't bad. And
you,
no, you can't give it back. That's a great story, though. And so I'm going to try that when I go out and see them. Thanks.
That's pretty cool, Mary. Thanks a lot.
I don't know why they did.
You.
You were asking why they did it, and I don't know. They were just disoriented and went to wherever you picked them up from. They apparently liked when they had a choice, so they were just going back there. I don't know.
Dare I veer from cicadas for a moment and get your opinion via Kathy? Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Welcome.
I just had a question about what he thought about the ultrasonic pest repellers, if he thought they were effective or not.
I have not heard that any of those things are particularly effective, especially like for mosquitoes and stuff. And when the ultrasonic, and I'll fess up right in front that I don't know precisely, and I'm not sure how much further the technology has come. But when those first came out, they were fairly refuted, I think, in most of the, at least the scientific literature. And there's a lot of misinformation and bad knowledge about bugs out there, it's really easy to sell things that, you know, people think are going to cure all their ills. And I don't think those work. And I think the best thing that will work for something like mosquitoes outside is a fan blowing across where you are. And if you can position, and I've always thought that at a picnic table or whatever, if you had a fire close by and could get the fan to blow the smoke sort of in the direction of the picnic table without asphyxiating everybody, but... Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much of a wind to knock a mosquito out of the air. And so setting up a little bit of a wind current would make your cues, the carbon dioxide and heat that they target when they come to find you, it would make those a little bit more difficult to locate. And also it would make it harder for them to sort of navigate. And so citronella works a little bit, but I've never heard that the ultrasound ones work very well.
Okay, Kathy, did that help?
I don't know for sure if they work or not, but I don't think so. I mean, everything I've heard is that they don't work, but that might be different now. Did you ever try one?
That's why I'm calling, because I want to get the expert opinion on it.
Before you try one.
Right, exactly. But I'm mainly concerned about the brown recluse spiders I think I have in my house, and I hate to kill them because they don't really seem like they want to bite me. They seem so docile compared to other spiders.
Where do you live?
I live on the west side of Columbus.
What makes you think they're brown recluse spiders?
I'm not sure, and that's another thing. I wish I could talk to you about that because I want to identify them correctly. And I look on the internet and look at pictures, and it looks like that's what they are, but I'm not exactly sure. But I know that they're dangerous, so, you know, I didn't want to.
They're probably not dangerous, and they're almost certainly not brown recluses. And without seeing them, it's hard to say for sure. But you know what you should do is get one of them in a container and maybe put on some sort of bomb defusing gear or something to protect yourself, so you can put one in a container. I'm sure they're not going to come after you if you just go scoop one up and take it over to Ohio State to their entomology department and get it clearly identified before you try to do anything. And I would bet I would bet a lot of money they're not brown recluse spiders, and I would bet also that they're very not dangerous.
So, don't live in fear, Kathy. Capture one of those things and figure out what it is.
By the way, ultrasonic will not help with spiders.
Okay.
They just don't respond to any of that stuff.
I think we have time for one more call.
Let's do another hour.
Robin in Reynoldsburg.
Let's get Mim back.
Robin, do you have a question or comment?
Quick question. I'll take it off the air.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious about Native American folklore and cicada. Deal and how much impact on the 17-year-old cycle for cicadas has that had since the introduction of Europeans to the States? That's all.
Okay.
You know what? I'll tell you what I know. Don't ask questions.
You don't know
that
the answer?
No, I don't. But it's also a very interesting question. And a couple years ago when the ancient Egyptian exhibits blew through here, the museum had one, the art museum had one, and COSI had one. And I looked specifically for bugs because those guys lived in a river desert floodplain, and you know that there were bugs everywhere. And the only bugs you saw in either of those exhibits were scarab beetles, and they didn't have a whole lot of folklore about other insects. And I know that there had to be huge impacts of other bugs on their lives on their whole life history.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a really interesting and good question about Native Americans, because I have never heard any sort of historical cultural references. But now I have some research to do when I go back. Call next time and we'll talk about it.
Thank you, Robin. And I want to get one more in. Sarah in Pataskal, a weird cicada story.
Yes. When I was a kid, we used to take them and the dried shells, spray paint half of them with some kind of color, and then face them off as armies out in the sandbox.
Did one color do particularly better than another?
No, it was whatever we could steal out of our dad's workshop.
Oh, my gosh.
That is so funny. I like it. You don't even need toy soldiers because nature provides.
I think we were ahead of our time. That was in the 60s, and it was mostly cowboys and Indians then.
We were doing
aliens.
Okay, that's so funny. Sarah, thanks for calling. I really appreciate that.
Doesn't it make you wish they were here this year, Ann?
Yeah. I mean, it's so boring, but you can travel to the East Coast.
I'm going to try to.
Out of time for now. I know. But it went by too fast. Mark Berman, thanks so much for joining us, though.
You didn't even act scared. Well, just once.
Well, because you didn't pull out any dang spiders today. Mark Berman, he's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. Thanks again for joining us.
Look for us in the libraries this
summer,
too.
And thanks to the Allside staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, those wonderful questions from assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karim Chaban, Shannon Clary, and Leticia Wiggins, video production by Rich Karsmiski and Amber Karsmiski. Great video production today, of course, as usual. And the composer of our theme music is Alan DeCenzo. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. And streaming on the web, not the spider web, at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.